Soy profesor en un liceo oscuro.
Hello and welcome to OEG Voices.
OEG Voices.
OEG Voices.
OEG Voices.
A podcast bringing to you the voices and ideas of open educators from around the world.
OEG Voices is produced by Open Education Global,
a member-based nonprofit organization
supporting the development and use of open education globally.
Learn more about us at oeglobal.org.
There's much to take in at a global level.
We hope to bring you closer to how open education is working
by hearing the stories of practitioners
told in their own voices.
Each episode introduces you to a global open educator,
and we invite you to later engage in conversation with them
in our OEG Connected community.
I am Alan Levine from Open Education Global. This is OEG Voices, our podcast series, and it's a special episode. Well, it's special because we have Gino and Werner here, but it's also Open Education Week. And so we decided, to set up this format where we can invite other people to join in the conversation. So this is going to be unstructured and formal, and I hope our guest here, you certainly welcome to chime in at any time and be part of the conversation. Give them a really difficult, challenging question. So first... You can't see this on the podcast. Gino's shaking his head at me. He's like, what did I get into? So let's go over to this is sort of like I come up with these themes because both our guests, weather is important. They live and work in the southernmost countries of their continent. So we're going to go to South Africa and say good afternoon to Gino Friendsman. Hello, Gino.
Hi, Alan. And hello to everyone. And thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So now you did win the Open Education Award as Emerging Leader, and I see behind you the award.
Yeah.
That's quite excellent. So just tell, what do we need to know about Gino?
Well, I've been in education for 20 odd years now, and it's been a journey of self-discovery, of learning, and mostly unlearning. Especially coming into the open education environment and community, because I've learned how not to hold things too close to my chest, to let go of things and to share and be open and open up to input from other people in order to be better and to help others be better. So, it's a passion. It's not just a job, and that's why I'm here.
That's beautiful. And I know from, I've had interactions with you for maybe only 2 years. It's just, you bring energy to everything. And so I'm looking forward to that in our conversation today. And it just so happens we're going to jump across the Atlantic Ocean to Chile, where we have Werner Westermann. Good morning. It is morning, right there, Werner?
Yes, sir. 10 a.m.
Good, good. Welcome.
Thank you, Alan. A big hug to every one of you. And it's been a long time we haven't had the chance to be together. And I really miss you guys. And I'm here in the ex-Congress, because the real Congress, it's in Valparaiso, which is the main port, seaside port. But it has the facilities here in Santiago, the capital. So a big hug. Very happy to be with you guys.
Your work is with the Library of Congress, right? So what's the connection? Well, there's obviously a connection there to education, but and I don't even know, is it common for most countries to have something like a Library of Congress, a national library? I've seen some in other countries, but what's its role in Chile?
Well, it's not the same in the role as the Library of Congress of the United States, which is the big main library. This is a very parliamentary, very law-driven library where, first of all, you have to, gather all the heritage of the work of Congress. It was founded in 1880, so it's a democratic institution. And I work specifically around citizenship education. That's my role here. I work in a program dedicated to that. So But I've been engaged in open education much more earlier than this job. So open education for me has always been something on the side of my main work. So
yeah,
it's been a constraint, but it's also giving you freedom to do a lot of things.
You know, some things that, you know, we talked about just before the show is really trying to get a better understanding about your perspectives, because even, you know, we're really enjoying Open Education Week. And, you know, we also want to hear about, like, you know, how you see that. But that's our event. We want to talk about what the work that you're doing. But, you know, we started putting these things on the map, and, you know, there are dots on the map, but there are huge dots in North America and Europe. And we really wish we had more dots and more people participating. And maybe they are. That's the thing about Open Education Week. But can you frame, like, what the perspective is, or maybe even what some of this tension is that there is a lot of work that goes on where you live that people don't seem to know about or really to understand. So what can we do maybe as this global organization to counteract that?
Let me just jump in. I am sad to say that open education is not a main theme, or it's not a main trend in the educational space here in Chile. I know it's different in a few countries in Latin America that have had longer steps, but I think that it's also not a very main thing. I think that's a big challenge, how we can mainstream open education, whether values, practices, resources, or whatever. We have a big challenge there to place open education and openness in general within the educational activity. I know in countries like Uruguay, they've made very concrete steps towards open education, and I think that's a country that leads here in Latin America. And we have the case of Brazil. Brazil, it's like a continent in itself. So and there's also a language barrier. So there's a lot of things happening there, because it's very big, and they've made a lot of institutional, you know, changes towards openness, whether it's procurement of resources for schools, and there's a lot of happening also in the higher education space in Brazil. So I think that's a, but I think we have a lot of constraints to work around, so we can put open education and openness in the spotlight, so we can guide our educational challenges, because we cannot forget that we're not passionate about open education because we love it. We do love it, but we love it because it brings a higher impact in learning, or that's what's our main goal. So I think that's kind of a small perspective here from Chile and in the region.
Yeah,
very different than South Africa, surely.
Yeah, Gino, can you speak for all of Africa?
Yeah, I'll just inject my voice as the voice of the continent. Why won't I? I think just from my experience and my limited exposure to what's, I don't know, possibly going on, because I think one of the constraints is that we often find ourselves in the space of raising awareness. So we're dealing with terminology. And I said this before we began, I spent so much time just trying to support people's understanding of what open education is. And then I'm in an environment where people around me interchangeably use words like open access, OER, you know, open science is suddenly an open textbook. And these are people with job titles that suggest an enhanced understanding, not just of terminologies, but of strategies of realizing these terminologies into action, into being. So it's a big problem, and it's one of those obstacles that literally stands in front of any progress very often. A lot of the institutional sort of reality is that open education is project-based. So we'll get donor funding, and maybe that donor funding has a time span as any project sort of based endowment usually is. So in 3 years, you're basically supposed to change the world so that you show some sort of impact in that project and sort of some sense of deserving funding. So that's a challenge. And I'm now at the end of 1 year of funding in the Siyapo Malela grant, which funds the open education influences. And we've done a lot. And I can say thank you to OE Global for supporting us in our journey, because it's been a meaningful sort of support, but also guiding organization that's helped to shape where we go and how we get there and what we do once we are there. In South Africa, you hear about open education when people celebrate an outcome. So it's almost like, oh, look, we've done this, and we'll have an event, and at that event, we will platform that thing. But I think that if we could have more focus on the processes, on the process of applying, on the process of being accepted and then guided, something that Open Education for a Better World, for example, tries to do. There's a process of guidance that helps to build you into a space where you can do and be and, you know, perform and just do more. So I think that there's a transient nature when we speak about openness. Yeah. It's like, okay, we'll open up for a flash and show you something inside, and then we'll shut down and we'll go back to the same old, because that's really where you get recognized and rewarded.
Thinking too, like, let's say a little bit more about like things you're focused on or interested right now. And maybe I'll start with Werner. Like, first of all, like, what does a typical day look like for you? Like, what's on your schedule today? And and then what is the thing that you really want to be working on that excites you?
I think this is no mystery to any of you, but for me, the little kids are my big passion. The little ones, they have been so punished because of the pandemic, and I think the learning loss or the learning poverty that this generation of kids has had because of the educational disruption is something that that really needs to call upon our action, and we need to recover from, and I think we will need to recover within a pandemic world going on. It's something that I think urgency, we need to embed urgency within our tasks. And so in that sense, and I think that relates to the award, because I was proposed by Learning Equality Foundation, which is the organization that develops Colibri, a very, very interesting learning platform. But it's more than a learning platform. You have a studio where you can build things, and you have a huge library. I think, at least for K-12, one of the most exciting repositories of OER in I think in the world. They've managed, you know, to have a big library so you can do many things with that library. So I think there's a very cool infrastructure within the Colibri ecosystem that enables you to do a lot of things. And just to add one thing, they just released it last week, a data synchronization of the offline work, because Colibri was built with a sense of an offline first, so we can bring, you know, digital education to the most vulnerable or the marginalized. And I'm mentioning this because I think one of the things that I'm very excited about in the work that we did with Learning Equality was to reuse I think a lot of the discourse around open education and how to embed it within the education communities is that you have to build, you have to create. But we also know that those are very, you know, high stake processes, and they're very complex, or they can be complex. It's complex to use platforms to share. It's complex to, you know, to get a rapid vision of an OER editor, like I'm thinking about H5P or something like that. It takes a lot of work, and you have to spend a lot of time. So, but I think we can have a lot of fast tracks within the resources we have today. I think, you know, open education has had a walk. I think it's gone far, and we have wonderful things. I'm thinking about the FET simulations or Khan Academy and other resources that they're very high quality. They can compete with any because that's a big problem. I think we always have to face, you know, when we try to push open, is it, but what's the quality of that? How good are those resources? And now we can say that we have a lot of very cool things. And I think we can go very far if we were able to, you know, to reuse it. And for example, what I did in the work that we had with Learning Equality is that we curricularly align existing, pre-existing resources. We recognize those resources and we align them, we match them with the learning objectives of, so we did a very cool curriculum in very short time. I think that was also very, very interesting, how you can develop curricular materials or resources in very short time if you were able to reuse.
And how did the new platform for teachers, like how did the curricular alignment really gel for them? Is like, you know, this all makes sense. It wasn't just another, like, here's another new tool that you need to try. Like, like what happened with those curricular aligned?
I'm sad to say that I haven't been able to put in the ground the all these resources we curricularly aligned. We did present this to the ministry, and the ministry said, "Wow, this is cool," and they committed to two things: to deliver this content channel of curriculum aligned resources to rural schools. Because they were already working with Calibri as an offline learning platform, and they also had a offline solution for public schools that they were going to embed this. But I tried to do some monitoring on that and didn't have much response. This Friday is a change of governments. We have a new elected president, and so I think they didn't care much about responding because they're already leaving. Oh. A very turbulent government that we had the last 4 years. I don't know if you reckon, but we had a huge outrage, and now we're writing a new constitution. A lot of trouble around that, so they're very exciting times here in Chile.
Well said, and I really thank you, because it was like our conversations a year ago, like you introduced me to the Calibri. So can you explain how that works? Is like an offline, like I'm in a rural school that doesn't have good internet connectivity, so what does it look like for that setup, and what do teachers do, what do students do?
Well, first of all, you have this library where you can download different channels. Basically, what you do with Calibri, with the learning platform, is that you install, you download, and you install, or you can download or with a hard drive or whatever, and you can mount content channels. That's how they're called. And you have a lot of things where you can grab from. You can grab standalone resources, but you can bring huge collections, and so you can feed your learning platform in an offline way, and and you can have access to that. And you can also reorganize those resources, have sequences and create other and create assessments and lesson plans and stuff like that. You also have the Calibri Studio, which is like a web-based platform where you can build and you can organize it, and then you can create channels. It's a place where you create these channels where you can download. And then you have the platform where you can have tasks and you can, like I mentioned, now you have data synchronization with the offline work. So if you're working in your home and you bring your device to your school where you have the server and that data syncs into the server and the teacher can, you know, monitor and get feedback, et cetera, over. It's a very cool, it's very minimal this way. It's very lightweight. It's built for a low tech communities. And it's very minimal, so it's very easy to use, very easy to learn. So I think it covers a lot of the challenges for adoption, this tool.
Yeah, thank you. And like, I could go down this rabbit hole because I'm fascinated by these approaches. And, you know, we have WikiFundi, and there was the Rachel project that this idea about being able to provide education content where we don't have this access to the internet really fascinates me. So we could slide down that whole role, but we want to get some word in from Gino, and we'd like to hear too some about like work you're doing now at Nelson Mandela or Open Education for a Better World. But like, what's your regular workday look like, Gino?
Insane. like I said, Open is project-based, so it's not my job. It's something I'm working hard to sort of manifest into something that's more institutional-based. But right now it's project-based, which means that I set up teams of both students and academic staff, and then the role is actually to try the best that you can to empower people to be able to take the sort of the word of open out to the masses. And let's not turn this into a religious sort of metaphor, because that backfires quite often. But it's to take the news, the potential, the possibilities, and also then I think to launch some activities where people start engaging with open beyond just understanding what it is, but exploring what it could be, what it could have meaning for both themselves, either as personal, professional, or academic development for those that they are there to support and to guide. So in a nutshell, I try to infuse open into much of what I do, wherever that is, be it in the performing arts, be it in sort of the professional development of staff who are contracted into the project, but also then other staff who are contracted into my role as an academic developer. So it's just to infuse open where and as is possible. The interest really are exceptionally focused on professional development. So what can open do and how can it contribute to you being better at your chosen or desired profession? So there are several legal professionals I'm quite happy to say in the South African legal environment who have sort of navigated some of these activities alongside me, who have gone on to become attorneys. There's some practicing in the High Court now. And it's an amazing thing when you hear from people that instead of them just relying on sort of the traditional resources, that they go out, they search for openly licensed materials so that they can share in a more sort of open manner, to just use the same word. Um, but also then pass on that knowledge to others. So it's sort of I touch you, you touch that person, and just to try and make that a process so that the transient nature of the project-based thing, and Werner said something about with the government and that there's a new government coming on Friday. And that's also so much project-based because this government has a set of priorities, and towards the end of it, then you'll see that there's an interest sort of emerging somewhere. Oh, yeah, let's explore open. Oh, we can look at cost saving. We can look at better accessibility. We can look at increasing the quality of resources. And then the next government comes in and they've got this stock list of priorities that don't look at the nuances that open very often facilitates us into exploring and engaging with. You know, when we start looking at support materials instead of the standard prescribed materials in a classroom that people are using. So instead of, like Werner said, also recreating something and reusing is something that we should be pushing so much more, but people want almost a stamp with their name on it that says, I made this because the making of this is where they think their value lies. You know, so I'm the holder of knowledge and I prove my holding of knowledge by showing you this book that I've created. Look, there's my name on it and there's the institution's name on it. And that's what, unfortunately, these institutions, and very often including mine, prioritizes as this is what is recognized, this is what is rewarded, this is how you get promoted. So these are all sort of challenges. Another passion of mine, which is something that you said is an interest. I very rarely have interests. I more often have this energetic passion for things. But it's student voice. What do students experience in these spaces? We focus so much on the teaching element, but we don't see students as teachers in and of themselves. And I think that open education allows us a lot of opportunities to both motivate, but also to empower students into being active teachers, educators in the space of education. Academics around here don't like that very much, in the same way that publishers don't like open all that much, because these sort of standard processes that are the institutional processes where we find ourselves are the real hurdles for the adoption very often of just openness, all of those dimensions of open. I think access is another one of those passionate interests that I have. I grew up in a very small town in Cape Town where we had very little, where the resources were stretched so far. And if we had more access to good quality learning materials, you know, so many more of my peers would be in spaces today where they would be less reliant on sort of menial roles that they've had to take up in society. And I know some absolutely brilliant people who, just because of a lack of access, have been denied the opportunities that they could very easily, efficiently, effectively have stepped into and shone. So that's like a real big sort of passion of mine. And then another thing is, like Werner said, like, how do we know that this is good quality? And very often quality is related to place of origin. But that is the discrimination of note, which I am standing up against, because just because something is from, sorry to say so, the global north doesn't make it better than something that's from the global south. I think that we need to work on these paradigm shifts in understanding that we need to be able to look at quality as not a place of origin, but that there are different facets that make something good, that make something effective and efficient and valuable. And very often it doesn't mean that just because something's made at, I don't want to even say an institution of higher learning somewhere and just like sort of point fingers. And yeah, so these are passions of mine. And I think that open education gives us all an opportunity to really contribute and contest these long-held assumptions of what is good, what is valuable, who are you, who am I?
Thank you, Gino. Like I said, we're going to quote that. We're going to quote that so we can see why both Gino and Werner earn these awards. I'm thinking too, like I'm sensing like we're still like obviously a lot of work on awareness and openness, and maybe it's just such a long, you know, time frame. But there's, you know, I've seen, you know, even just this year in terms of what we see going on in Open Education Week, but across other projects, that there is an incremental amount more focus on student voice and the student role in open education or education in general. And generally, these things are probably changing on a time scale that we don't really, you know, that we don't see. But, you know, I think as we look back in a couple of years, maybe we'll still start to see some of this shift. I mean, does that make sense, you know, from where you are in the world?
May I jump in? I think there's a lot of constraints in our educational systems today. You know, educational systems are being very much cut off. They've been questioned as in the role, and I think there's a lot of processes happening within it. For example, one that's very clear is about privatization of education. That's been a process of the last 40 years. Of course, in every country, it's been a different story. But I think there's no country that kind of gets out of that role, except in the small countries like Uruguay. Very, you know, 3 million. Yeah, it's a different scale of. And so I think those constraints are very difficult because we think that we can promote open education through raising awareness. But I think, like Gino said, we start with the concepts and say, hey, this is something open. And what's open? No, this, you have this license, and you get into this legal thing that is very little appealing to teachers or even less to students. And I agree with Gino in his work. I mean, he's Gino's work is work around how you can support people so they can get into this and get a grab of this different ecosystem or context, and where you have to be empowered to do things. I mean, that's the cool thing about student-centered learning, which I think open education is very matched with that. That's why I think open education is the way to not only, you know, widen access, but to be innovative, you know, to change the ways that people learn and teach. It's something that society is demanding, you know, is yelling at us and say, hey, we cannot foster anymore this education thinking that the teacher, the holder of knowledge, and we trespass this to the students, like there were buckets and you have to fill with knowledge or concepts or whatever. And I think this is very important because in this process of privatization, constantly stumble with this idea that, no, to be a good educator is to have this book written by me. So I think that's also part of this privatization of education, where educators, you know, have to compete for funds, and like Gino says, you know, very project based, and that can be a small project or a bigger project. But when you're doing a project, you have to be thinking what's going to be the next project, and that's a very vicious, you know, circle that I think it ends very clear. So I think this raising awareness has to be a lot more, you know, hands-on focus, and it takes time, because you have to be there, you have to support the people that want to make the, in the digital world, you stumble with a stumbling block, and you have to hurdle that, and if you don't have the support to hurdle that, you're going to get stuck, and you won't progress, and you won't be able to participate in this virtual cycle of what openness, you know, proposes us. Now you can create something and you can iterate it and you can assess it and you can quality assure, and then you get feedback from your students, from your peers, and then you take all that and you enhance that, and you have this, you know, virtuous cycle of iteration. I think that's kind of the way forward, so we can not only face the challenges, but also, you know, the culture that's been installed in these 40 years of privatization of education. Gino, just a small thing to follow up on this idea of how to move forward. And I think we need to, in some way, try to get away from this legal thing and go to the practice and go to the learning goal and discuss. That's what we... because we know that there's also this cost efficiency side of OER in openness, which I think it's a discussion that ends very rapidly, because for many it's not an issue about money. Of course, in our countries it is an important matter, but it's very... I don't think people get very appealed about that. And I think we need to move forward and say, this is something better, because learning, it's better to learn this way. It's better. It's better quality, better results, better impact.
Mm. Thanks. Werner, I just literally want to follow on from what you were saying, like in terms of we need to move beyond awareness raising. It becomes a tired conversation. It's tiresome if you're the person in that conversation on the other side from somebody who's basically trying to teach you language. And it's a language that, in our experience in the Open Ed Influencers Project, is better understood through the process of doing, through the process of succeeding, of being challenged, but also of not meeting an assessment where you sort of being tested on, like, do you understand what open means? Do you understand what the licenses mean? What sort of the facets of the domain enable or disable? And that's literally, and Alan, I'm moving into what you asked about before, which was, so what are you doing now? And we made Bowie, which is becoming an open education influencer, just so that after 15 years of literally having to tell people what open education means, what OER stands for, and then what the dimensions of open education are, you know, and all the licensing things, like we said, it's tiresome. And it's so repetitive, because you have five people in a workshop and one of them's attended before, and you're doing a repeat of the basics of open education terminology. And then you're telling them these are licenses, and they don't get to remix or to do anything with content and see how it actually manifests, because we're still dealing with the basics of terminology. So we made Bowie, which is becoming an open education influencer. And the six modules are open. Ubuntu, which is an African philosophy of sharing. So it's open. It's opening, right? Then advocacy, facilitation, influencing, and the sustainable development goals put us into the world and what's happening globally. And what we've discovered now is, in order to make, instead of speak about making, or the potential that openness suggests for the ability to make things, we set up an open textbook fellowship now. And very excited about this. I've got two fully recruited staff members who are in production with open textbooks with all openly licensed materials in there. So there's no copyright issues at all. Part of what they need to do to empower themselves before setting off on this journey is to complete Bowie. And Bowie has an 80% pass mark. So we have a certain level of comfort that once you've done the open module, that you know what you're speaking about, firstly, that you know how to license things, that you know how to use a remixer instead of having to try and be a generator of a license and this whole thing yourself, is that you know how to use the tools which have been created for all of us to do this with a few clicks of a button. And yet, you know, the traditionalist out there would want you to be able to write a reference by hand instead of going to Microsoft Word and just putting in fields and, you know, click a button and there's your reference and your reference list. So what we've discovered now is that the people who've done the course are so excited, are so, they're literally amped in terms of how can I create this thing, but then also where am I going to position this? Where am I sending this and what is it going to mean? So the meaning is slightly different to impact. So the project would want us to show impact. These authors are thinking about what does this mean to the students to be engaging with something that's made for them? Because for me personally, when you've put yourself into something and you've given this to me, there's a personal sort of dimension to this, which is beyond open. It's a humanity sort of facing engagement with the learning and teaching materials, which is so much more appreciated. So we've got two textbooks. One's looking at self-coaching for students because, again, we've got all of these practitioners in the education space who are speaking to students, speaking at students. What if students had an internal dialogue where they were engaging with dimensions of becoming somebody who's in the higher education space and dealing with these things themselves instead of with a counselor? So it is coming from a place of counselors, and it's directed at students who are able to engage with this themselves. And then the other one is open education and five performing arts, because the performing arts are something that's just not being engaged with widely in open education, because people think that this is all about, you know, it must be science, it must be business, it must be these, I don't know, these more rigorous academic topics. And yet we have performance art schools, we have all of these things that help us get by on a daily basis. If I don't get to watch someone in a piece of entertainment, engage with some music, engage with some art, you know, my day is really dull. The shine isn't there. The motivation for me to be creative myself isn't there. So we're trying to do this. We're looking for three more, and that's what's happening next week. Tomorrow, I'm contracting an all-new cohort of OpenEd influencers for this year. They're busy with Bowie now, and I'm getting some feedback about, like, oh, sir, why is this so difficult? Because this shouldn't really be easy. We want professionals. We want people who are able to go out and speak to other professionals professionally. So I think that, like Werner said, empowerment is key for us to do anything that's going to be meaningful for those who are engaging with it. It's really nice to throw a textbook at someone and say, you know, learn this. But afterwards, what have you really learned about how to do this with what you've learned, how to do something, how to change a situation or someone's life with this? So I'm so invested in this. I'm so excited about just the possibility of creating resources that will help other people to help others create and to do and to be. So I'm excited. I'm nervous. I'm challenged. I'm all of the above right now, because likewise, all of this means that we need to show that this has meaning to the project and to the funders also. So it all comes with a layer of anxiety, I think.
See what I said about the energy of Gino. Thank you. And I have to say, I want to get to talking about music, because we found out both of you have not only interest in music, but real talent. But like, to say to a practicing musician that art is not rigorous, like, they haven't like produced an album or you know, really sat down and wrote something original. But I also want to like give voice to anybody else here in the room who might want to comment or put out a question to Werner or Gino? Marcella, is that your hand, Marcella?
That's my hand, yes. Yes, I know that we're close to the top of the hour, and I didn't want to miss the opportunity to, first of all, congratulate you both for this beautiful award that you're receiving. What a pair. Honestly, it was amazing to me to see both of your names on the list, and I'm very excited about it. And I just wish that we would be able to give you a physical hug, but this is your hug here, and hopefully very soon we will be able to hug in person. And as longstanding members of the community, I do have a question, because we've heard about your work and everything that you have been doing for a really long time. And I wanted to ask you both, we've heard a little about the passion that keeps you going with Open, but what exactly does motivate you? When things get really demanding, how do you recharge and what keeps you going? I think it's one of the questions that we usually receive for the newcomers, because all that you have been describing, particularly in your countries and my country as well, there are challenges. And that question that we get constantly is, well, I have this project, I got the fundings. I don't know if I'm going to get fundings for the next project, but why do I do this? How do I keep on going? And both of you have been with the community for a really long time. And I wonder, how do you do it?
I think it's not very much different from you, Marcella. I think the word passion, it's very interesting in its lexical root. And it's very interesting because when you're passionate, the word comes from passive. And the sense of being passionate is that you kind of let go for something that gets you and you are passive in front of that, you know, that feeling or that it's something that overtakes you and just doesn't go. And I think the passion that we have with Open Education is that we find a space to do new things, and how we can overcome this tragedy of, you know, industrialized education. And as you guys know, I'm very keen on the K-12 sector. You know, how can schools not be the reproduction of all the inequalities that we face? How can we put the student, the learner, in his needs, in the center of our work, and not upside down? I think society is just screaming at us, and I think it's been part of this process because, you know, educational systems are facing privatization because other actors have come into the ball game, obviously with their interest because the educational system has not been able to adapt to this new world, and it's a world that's falling apart. So I think our hopes for a better world, in our work, you know, whatever we do, we end up looking to openness to give us a light, so that we can follow. That's my shot, Gino.
Well, I like that. I do, and ditto is sort of a response from me. There are also perks to being involved in Open. Let's none of us deny this, and I think that first and foremost is being part of a global community, which is something that in the traditional education space is almost unheard of. You may attend a conference here and there, like as a traditional academic or staff member, but those are fleeting. You know, you come there, you're there for 3 days and you engage with someone, and that engagement is usually done. In the Open community, whether you meet face-to-face or not, there's an engagement that's so robust, that's so supportive, that's so challenging at times. It asks that you do better, that you you sort of state what it is that your intentions are so that other people can support them. So I love that. And then I have to say, traveling, being part of this community has opened up the world for me. And that's something that has been so valuable that will always be one of my main motivators in terms of being part of this community. It's to go out there, meet people, and to engage and to do better.
All right. Thank you so much. I do want to quickly talk about music because when we plan these shows, I ask our guests if they want to suggest a track, you know, that we can use. And it was a little bit of a loaded question because I know Gino has shared some of his music before. We're going to have... I'm going to mix a track of Gino's music. But then Werner said, like, wait a minute, I'm part of a group. We have an album. So what is it about music with you two? What does it do for you?
Yeah, for me, music, it's something very similar to open education because it's like a labyrinth that you don't know where it ends. And you kind of circle around looking for something. I think music is a way to try to find something that you haven't found yet. You know, creating songs, because I'm like a songwriter. I'm not much of a mixer that's what Gino does. And to create a good song, it's just so difficult. And it's a mystery. You know, for those guys who have that talent. So I've been chasing that for many years. I have like 5 records and haven't mastered it yet. Although I've gotten better, I must say. But I think it's this constant way of looking for something that you haven't found. But you know it's out there and you're looking for. And that drives you, you know. Sit down and write and get the guitar. And so it's like an ongoing trip.
Well said. And because you shared an album, and I want to make sure I get the group name right. Is it Gerontophobia? And what is that?
Yeah, Gerontophobia. The Gerontophobia is the phobia of getting old.
I thought so. That was my... That's great.
It's not a phobia against older people.
Right.
The phobia of yourself, you know.
Yeah.
Traveling.
That is the thing. And Gino, like, you just I'll share the music that I picked in a second. But what was your calling to music? And well, obviously, it probably means a lot to you. But talk about your music, your drive for music.
I grew up on the stage. It was what I was going to do. My masters looked at performance and performance as a gateway to looking at identity amongst the youth. So it sort of just combined a whole bunch of different elements. And that's what music is to me. It's a bunch of different elements that if you can put it together and it makes someone move their head or tap their fingers or their feet, then you've done something right. And I think that that's how it sort of segued into education, because we're trying to do the same thing here. We're trying to put a whole bunch of things in together and have you tap your head and then say, oh, I understand, or I like this or whatever. So music, open education, putting things together and hoping for the best.
Very well said. Well, I want to thank you both and our guests for sitting on this conversation. I'm going to do the little bit of closing. If you have like an extra 2 minutes, Gino and Werner, I have a thing where I like to ask our guests to read the introduction that I have set up for our podcast. We mix different voices together, so it's a little bit of a gimmick. So if you don't mind, I will pass it in the chat. But I just want to thank everybody here, Gino Friendsman and Werner Resterman, for being our guests, and the people who showed up in the studio for this episode of OEG Voices, which is from us at Open Education Global. And so we're going to have open licensed music from both our guests. And so Gino shared sort of a Latin track ish called Bossa Nova Girl, and you're going to enjoy it. And Werner shared an entire album, and I had a hard time picking one. And I think I'm going to go with the opening track, which I believe is Auto. I'm going to mangle it, Werner, but I believe it means self-portrait. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Autoretrato?
Autoretrato, yes. And it's very, very, you know, pertinent to this conversation, because it's a song, which it's a poem from a very renowned Chilean poet called Nicanor Parra. He had a book in 1954 that really rocked the floor. And this poem is part of that book. He created the anti-poetry. It's a concept you can look it up in. It's a poetry very filled with humor and very keen on the social side. So it's a song about a self-portrait of a teacher that gets diminished in precarization because of this way of teaching, you know, 500 hours of work, and it's a self-portrait of how, you know, this teacher just gets demoralized and between this goes. So screaming for the need for a new way of education. I think that's the final message.
Screaming for the way. So you'll find this episode at our site, voices.eglobal.org. And if you want, you can sort of engage in follow-up conversations at OEG Connect. And certainly, we're always looking for suggestions or ideas or people who want to be on our show. So let us know. The more voices, the better. And thanks, everybody, for... We didn't even get to talk about how great Open Education Week is, but there's a lot going on. And so good. And thank you very much.
Yay! Well done.
Luz el sol, la venenosa luna miserable.